Okay, let's start over. Parshas Vayishlach, it ends off last week's parsha. On the end of Parshas Vayitzeh, it says, Vayashkin Lavan Bavoker, Lavan got up in the morning, Vayashkin Lavan Vavnosov, kissed his sons and his daughters, Vayvarach Hosan, Vayelech, and he left, Vayashkin Lavan Lankomo, Lavan went home. Yaakov's walking on his way, Vivku Bo Malach Elohim. These Malachim of God meet up with him. When Yaakov Kasharo Machne Elkimzeh, when Yaakov saw them, he said, this is a camp of God. Vayikoshim Vakomohu Machanoim. Calls the name of that camp Machanoim. Starts off this parsha of Yishlach Yaakov Malachim Lefonav Elisav Achiv Arta Seir Sde Adom. Yaakov sends out Malachim in front of him to Esav his brother to the land of Seir, to the field of Edom. A lot of weird things. Malachim is supposed to be messengers. The Rabbeinu Bechaya says, but it's got to be both. It can't be that he just sent messengers. He learned from Avram Avinu already. When Avram Avinu sent Eliezer Eved Avram, Eliezer Eved Avram had a malach that went with them, Metat, the Sara Olam, the angel of the world, that we learned about this morning. That Metat was the person that went ahead with them the entire way through. It was an angel that went with them. Yaakov Avinu learned from that, that when you go outside of Eretz Yisrael, you need malachim with you. So when he had those malachim, he took those malachim that were with him, and he sent them ahead, not only with the messengers. There were messengers, there was a physical messenger, and there were spiritual messengers as well. When they came back, that's why it says, Vayashuvu, that malachim, al Yaakov, they returned. That, the Rabbeinu Bechaya says, refers to the actual angels, because the angels don't have to walk. They just automatically return by turning around, and they find themselves back there. Or Banu Alachicha al Esav, saying we came to Esav, your brother, that was referring to the messengers themselves. That's how the Rabbeinu Bechaya puts it, that there are Malachim here, and there are regular messengers here. Okay, Rashi also says Malachim Amish. Real Malachim, right? We're talking about real Malachim. So we said that last week's parsha said that, right? What's going on here? The note to the Baal HaTurim says 400 million Malachim came to meet up with Yaakov Avinu. 400 million. With the amount of malachim that came to him, he saw those 400 million malachim and realized there's a reason why he has them. 400 million is to correspond to the 400 men that Esav had. 1 million for every one of the 400 men that Esav had. For the 1 million malachim to go surround him, destroy him, and to take care of anything that Esav was going to do. To take care of any problems that Esav was going to bring up. That was the reason for the 400 million malachim. Others say that the malachim were not just down 400 million. It was the same malachim that met him as the malachim that went up in the beginning of the parsha. Everybody knows in the beginning of the parsha, Yaakov Avinu went to sleep and he saw Sulam. He saw the ladder in the beginning of Parshas Vayetze. Now, on that ladder, he saw Malachim going up and he saw Malachim going down. Who are the Malachim going up? So the Das Zakenim, the Nionasim Menuziel, and the Moshe Zakenim all say the exact same thing. It was Michael and Gabriel. Why Michael and Gabriel? Because when Michal and Gabriel went to Sodom and they stayed by Lot's house, they told Lot as they were leaving the words "Mashchisim Anachnu," as the Irazos, we are going to destroy this city. HaKadosh Baruch Hu immediately went down to them and said, "You're going to destroy this city? You, not me. I'm not the one who's going to do it. You're going to do it." For that, the Malachim were taken down from their position. They were put into Gullus. They had to stay down on earth for over 137 years until Yaakov Avinu davened for them, and then they were able to go up the ladder, and that was the beginning of Parshas Vayetze. Michal and Gabriel went up the ladder. They went straight back up to Shemayim. It was the first time they had been up in Shemayim since they had said the word Mashchisim Anachnu 137 years earlier. Now, finally, they were going to be able to find their way back. So when he came back after meeting up with Lavan, the Malachim came out and they said, "Hey, how you doing?" They wanted to say hi back. They wanted to say, "Thank you so much for letting us go back to Shemayim." Michal and Gabriel came back to go say hello. It says Rav Olson, there's got to be a little bit more to that. How can Malachim sin? How are angels able to sin? How can they say the wrong thing? That's number one. And number two, what happened that made them come back? Malachim don't just stomp feel good. They don't have a car. I mean, do they have the concept of a karas hatov? We want to thank you for everything you did for me. All of a sudden, we want to thank you. We want to say, we appreciate it. What happened over here? What did the Malachim do wrong? There is a pasuk that we say in the Haggadah. It's not really a pasuk. It says ani. And the way the Haggadah darshens is ani velo malach. That I'm going to go down to Mitzrayim. I'm going to destroy the people and not a malach. I'm not going to allow any malachim to go down there. Why not a malach? The reason why is because the malachim, obviously, were going to be metame from all the tumah of Mitzrayim. Hashem was afraid that if he allowed the malachim to go down there, they would become contaminated from that tumah, and they would be destroyed, and they wouldn't be able to be normal malachim. They would be destroyed malachim, and nothing good would come out of them. So he was worried about that, and he said, "Oh, I can't send them down there. I'm going to do it all by myself." So he went down by himself, and he took care of all those malachim in Mitzrayim, of all the people in Mitzrayim. He did everything himself, not the malachim whatsoever. So too over here by Sodom. By Sodom, the place was so tame. When Gavriel and Michal went down there, some say it's Gavriel and Rafal, by the way, but the honest one who still says Gavriel and Michal. When Gavriel and Michal went down there, they felt the tumah of Sodom. When they felt that tumah and realized how much tumah was going on down there, they couldn't take it. And they ended up having gaiva, and they said the words, Mashchisa Manachna. They just couldn't take it anymore. It just brought them down to a tremendously low level. Why? Because they weren't prepared going in. So what's the tikkun? Prepare yourself before going to a makom tameh. Get yourself ready and prepare yourself before going to a bad place so that you know when you go there, everything should be okay. It's exactly what they did. What they did was, what Yaakovinu did was, right before he went to Lavan, where did he go?
Shiv Shem Vever.
For how many years? 14 years. Spent 14 years improving on himself, changing himself. Even though he's 63. He's 63 years old. He's been learning his entire life. He spent 14 years to prepare himself, to get himself ready to go to Lavan, so he's not brought down even one iota from the level that he was on. When Hashem saw there was a person that was like that, that type of a person can daven for the malachim and say it's not the malachim's fault. They just didn't have enough preparation time. Had they had the preparation time, they would have been fine. That person davened for them. That's what Yaakov did. He said, I prepared. I can daven for those malachim, and he was able to bring the malachim back up to Shemayim. When he came back down, the malachim checked on him to see had he changed at all. That's Vayitku Bo Malachei Elohim. They came to check on him. They wanted to see. Michal and Gavriel came down to go see, did you change? Are you lower than you were? And when they saw how great he was, it's not that he saw the malachim as if he couldn't meet them. They met up with him. They said Shalom Aleichem to him. They actually talked to him this time. He didn't just see them in a vision far away. They went up to him. They said hello to him. That was Michal and Gavriel. Not only as a thanks to go see to make sure that everything was there. Now you can understand that what were those malachim doing when he sent them out? He sent those malachim, Michal and Gavriel, were sent over to Esav to say what? Im Lavan Garti. What does Rashi say? I lived with Lavan. Tayag Mitzvah Shamarti. Only they could say that because they knew. They were assured there's no way that Yaakov could have sinned. Because if he would have sinned, we wouldn't be in the place that we are. So we know he couldn't have sinned. Those are the malachim that he was able to send out there. That was how they were able to say Tayag Mitzvah Shamarti. That's a revulsion. There's another word that comes out from all this. Machanoyim is a funny little word over here. All the Rishonim say the following. It's a Panachraza, Rabbeinu Ephraim, the Das Zakenim. They all say the exact same word. I think the Rosh says it as well. They all say Machanoyim stands for Meosam Chayalos Natal Yaakov Malachim. From those camps, from those things of Malachim, Yaakov took his malachim, and he sent them over to Esav. That's what Machanayim is supposed to stand for. So that's number one. The Chidah learns it up in a little bit of a different way. He says, I said this when I was a little kid, the Chidah says about himself. Rechaim Yosef David Azulai. Unbelievable genius, obviously, the Chidah. He says, when I was a little kid, I used to say, everybody makes their own malachim. You know that, right? Every single person has their own malachim that surround them. We say it on a Friday night, and everybody always looks strange when they're reading at my table, and we go ahead and say, they all make your own thing, and they're all there. These malachim are always there. They're always around. They're always doing this thing. The malachim are always there with you. You create them with your own mitzvos. Now, not all of us can see them. Some of us can. But not all, I'm joking, but not all of us can see those malachim. They're around, but you just don't realize they're there. The guy standing right there, he's tapping you on the shoulder, you just don't feel it. The malachim are saving you from everything. They make sure your head turns so you don't see that woman who's not dressed on that side. They make sure they slap you so that you fall down to the ground and you don't get hit by the car that was running right past. They do all these crazy things for you. They're guardian angels that are out there that are taking care of you at all times. These angels are with you at all times. They're angels that you created with your own mitzvahs and your own limud haTorah. With everything you do, you create your own mitzvahs. That is the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. That also mitzvah achas, if you do a certain mitzvah, kanalo praklet echad. You have a, what's the word for it? A praklet is a guy on your side. I don't know, a defending lawyer, an advocate. You have an advocate in Shemayim. You get an advocate. That's the malach. Yaakov always had those. All of a sudden, he looks at the malachim that are surrounding him, made by all his Torah and his mitzvos, and he's like, wait, who are those guys? And he's a whole bunch of malachim that are malachi Elohim, that are malachim straight from Shemayim. And he says, what are those guys doing here? So he goes up to them and he says, what's going on with you guys? What are you guys doing here? And they said, we're here to protect you from Esav. At that point, Yaakov realized, So he sent out his personal malachim over to Esav as his, what's it called, as his emissaries to go tell you, to go show Esav, these are the malachim that I have that show you how many mitzvot I have. Because I know I've done mitzvot, I know I've done Torah, I know I've had all these things done. How do I know? Because look at all these malachim. Those are the malachim they sent out, and that's how he could prove, in love and garti, tariyag mitzvot shamarti, I tariyag mitzvot that I must have kept. You learn out Machanayim, me'osam chayalos, nato Yaakov malachov. Of those armies of malachim, he took his own malachim and he sent them over to Esav. But the best word, by far, the one that I've been saying since I think I was six, is an Itzutz Shimshon over here. Unbelievable word. We said Rashi said malachim mamish. Malachim mamish, right? Every single day you say the words Ezras Abu Seinu. Ezras Abu Seinu. Anybody know where?
Just before Shmona Esrei.
Oh, yeah. That's what he meant. That's what he meant. Not that that was on Tadori. I won't say what your name is. anyway, but I didn't say it. But yes, it's right before Shmona Esrei. Some people have a longer Shmona Esrei. They include Shema in their Shmona Esrei. That might be why. But as I was saying, it was said right after Kriyat Shema, right before Shmona Esrei. Ezras is the gematria of 677. 677, the Ezras is the Malachim Michael, Malkiel, and Shanandiel. Michael, Malkiel, and Shanandiel. It's the gematria of all three altogether. You can do the quick gematria if you want right now. It's fine with me. It works. Either way, those three Malachim are the Ezras Avosenu. They helped out the Avos in everything they needed. That was Michael, Malkiel, and Shanandiel. Those were the Malachim that Yaakov sent. That's why it says Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim is the same gematria as 677. So he sent the 677, which was Ezra Savosenu, which was Michal, Malkiel, and Shenandiel. Look at Rashi. Who are the Malachim? Malachim, Mamish. Michael, Malkiel, Shenandiel. That's the Mamish. That's what Rashi means when he's saying that. Those were the Malachim that he sent. The Mamish, the Malachim that he sent, were those Malachim that that were considered the Ezra Savosenu. I'm sorry? You pretend to know all the Malachim? There's billions. But apparently he's out there. I can give you a couple others that you probably never heard of. Akasri, I said, I think, last week, right? I don't think we've ever heard of Akasri. He's a little out there. What?
Yes,
he was. Oh, so Akasri, you have heard of. And there's random people that are all out there. All right, there's another thing. He says, go tell Esav the following. Ba'ili shor v'chamor, son the eved v'shivcha. I have oxen and donkeys, sheep, slaves, and maidservants. Doesn't mention camels, even though he sends some camels later on. He puts the goats and the what's it called, and the lambs together, and puts it together as sown. What's going on over here? Why does he have to mention those things? So the Midrashim go crazy with this. Crazy amount of Midrashim. One of the Midrashim says, Shor refers to Mashiach ben Yosef. Chamor refers to Mashiach ben David. He rides on the donkey, right? Through the streets of Tzvas. You see that little stairway where that old woman always gives him food. Anyway, that's that. Tzon refers to the schus of Klal Yisrael, Bnei Yisrael themselves, the tzon of Laban. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Eved is Moshe, Eved Hashem. I have the schus of Moshe. Shivcha is... Drum roll, please. Okay, I was joking. Abigail. Abigail? What in the world? That just doesn't fit. We got two Mashiachs. We got Moshe. And Moshe's even close to Mashiach. He's only off by, 13 in the Gematria? Like, you're only off by a little bit over there. You know? Like, so what in the world is going on with Abigail? They got Klal Yisrael. Abigail by herself? What's going on? There was a crazy taina. Wolfson puts it down again. There was a crazy taina that Esav had on Yaakov that Yaakov really can't get out of. It's a little bit of a real problem. I mean, this is a real problem. The problem is, listen, buddy. I know you think you're so great, Yaakov. You have Mashiach. You have Klal Yisrael. You have Moshe Rabbeinu. If you're so great, how come you couldn't defeat Lavan? How come you couldn't destroy Lavan? What's up with that? How come you weren't able to do anything against Lavan? You didn't destroy him. You didn't make him into a Galshalatzamos. You didn't do anything to him. What stopped you from hurting Lavan? If you think you can destroy me and all my Tuma, my 400 Koachatum and everything, why didn't you take care of Lavan? should have taken care of him first. If you couldn't take care of him, I'm worse than him. I have much more power than Lavan does. So how come you couldn't take care of him? That's what he asked him.
Who says he has any obligation or
to go ahead and kill Lavan?
Or need to
the same way that Esav wanted to kill Esav, Lavan had the same desire. He was using Tuma all the time against Yaakov Inu, but he was never successful. So why didn't Yaakov go ahead and go right back against him? If he would have started an all out war against Yaakov, who says Lavan wouldn't have lost? Lavan was stopped by God. But if Lavan would have fought, who says he would have lost? If you weren't able to destroy him, says Esav, then who says you're going to be able to destroy me? How do you know? So he says, you know why I didn't destroy Lavan? Because there's a little bit of a story that's mentioned in Tanakh. The little bit of a story is that David HaMelech was watching the sheep of a guy by the name of Nabal. Nabal. A guy by the name of Nabal. He's watching over that sheep. He sends to Nabal and he says, please give me some food for watching your sheep for so long. So Nabal says, nah, I don't want to give you anything. Get out of here. I don't want to speak to you ever again. That's what he says to him. So he goes and he's ready to kill Nabal. He gets his weapons ready and he's like, all right, I'm destroying Nabal right now for acting insubordinate to the king, because I am the king. Abigail goes, that's Nabal's wife, goes and greets him with a lot of food and convinces him not to fight against Nabal. Says, please don't fight against Nabal. It's not the time. It's not the place. God will take care of Nabal. Don't worry about Nabal. God will take care of him. And when he takes care of him, remember me. 10 days later, Nabal died. They say it was Rosh Hashanah and Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, and then it was Yom Kippur. They say right around that time is when Nabal died. He died on Yom Kippur itself after the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah. And then afterward, Abigail went to David HaMelech, and Abigail married David HaMelech. And we know the whole story. Okay, Abigail was one of the main wives of David HaMelech. Okay, that was the story behind it. Unbelievable. Abigail is Leah. Nabal, switch the letters around, is Lavan. And Yaakov is David HaMelech. We know that David HaMelech got the years of Adam Rishon, the 7 years of Adam Rishon. We also know that Yaakov was Ein Shufrei, the Adam Rishon. He looked like the beauty of Adam Rishon. The Gilgul of Yaakov went into David HaMelech later on. There was a Gilgul, not a reincarnation. It was a Nitzutz of Yaakov Inu that went into David HaMelech. So David HaMelech was partly Yaakov Avinu.
Esav was supposed to be David HaMelech.
Oh, Esav had the capability of being David HaMelech. But when Esav didn't live up to it, then he lost the ability. He no longer was. And Yaakov took it over later on. It became the fourth Av, the Malava Malka Av. You know, the last level of that Av. What David did, what Yaakov said is, Leah told me not to do it. You know that whole conversation in the middle of Vayetze where he goes up to the wives and he's like, you know how many times Lavan's tried to trick me? Man, I hate him. And it seems like the weirdest psukim in the middle of nowhere. I don't like him anymore. I really want to leave. Should we leave? Leah's like, yeah, go. And Rachel's like, let's go. What he was asking was not just to leave. He said, should I fight against Lavan? Should I destroy Lavan? Should I take them all out? Said Leah and Rachel, we have nothing to do with our father anymore. Let God take care of Lavan. Lavan will go down eventually. You yourself just leave. Just get up and leave in the middle of the night. Don't let him know about it. So he got up and he left in the middle of the night. Lavan chased after him. Then Yaakov was willing to go ahead and kill him, but Leah still told him, don't do it. Don't do it. That's not what you're here for. You're not here to go up against Lavan. You're not here against Nabal. You're not here against Lavan. Don't allow yourself to get pulled in by here. Eventually, Lavan himself will go down, just like Nabal's going to go down. Said Yaakov, I know that's going to happen, and that's the reason why. So I have a Shifcha. I have Abigail. I have Leah on my side. Should have been yours, Esav. Should have been yours. But now it's mine. And because I have Leah, because I have Abigail, now I made sure that I wouldn't fight against Lavan, and I know that Lavan's going to go down on his own. You, on the other hand, I am scared of. Because Esav is not part of that whole deal. Esav might be somebody. He does have the power to be able to become something, and therefore I am Mamash Afraid. That's a little bit of a fear. But that's why I wasn't able to go up against Lavan. That's why... Well, let's not go any further with that. That's the basic idea behind it. That's that. Everybody knows Lavan became Bilam. We all know that, right? He was in Israel. Lavan ended up becoming Bilam. We know that Bilam became poor. He lost all his money. Fundamental knowledge, I think. If you didn't know this, I don't know what you're doing here. Yonatan Israel says it in Parshas Pinchas. It's a famous word that Bilam was Lavan. It's mentioned in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, I think, Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph. Somewhere around there. Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph. But there's a whole machlokas if it's really Bilam who's Lavan or is it Beor who's Lavan. Regardless, he lost all his money. Bilam was very, very poor at the end of his life. That's what it means, because he only had a donkey and everything like that. That was that. Vayikach mina bal yado. Now, this is the most unbelievable pasuk in the world. He sent over all these things to Esav. He sent over all these things to Esav, like sheep and goats and everything like that, all those things out there. And he sends out vayikach mina bal yado in pasuk yud dalet. He took from whatever came into his hand, mincha la Esav achiv, a gift over to Esav, his brother. What was that? So Rabbeinu Bachaya says it was a falcon. I don't know how to pronounce it correctly. A falcon. I don't know if that's like a weird way of pronouncing it or not. It is that, right?
Falcon.
Yeah. Yeah, because I was saying it today as falcon. And I was like, maybe it's just a Chicago accent. But I said, no, you're just an idiot. So apparently it wasn't the right way. Falcon, I think,
Wars,
is right.
Millennium Falcon.
There was?
Yeah.
Which is Star Wars?
That's how they pronounced it.
You're making yourself a geek right now, you know?
Yes.
All right, fine, yeah. Anyway, it's not falcon, though. That's only for Star Wars.
Falcon.
It's falcon.
Yes.
Okay. Either way, F-A-L-C-O-N. What he did is, that's what it is, yeah. Minabaliyado means he took something that Esav would be able to have in his hands when he went to go hunt. So he took something like that and he gave it over to Esav. Unbelievable, Rabbeinu Bachaya. So he went down and sent that over, and that F-A-L-C-O-N is what he sent over. The Baal HaTorim says it was precious stones and jewels and all the things that you could carry in your hands. He gave that over to the messengers, and they're the ones that brought that over. Yalkut Reuveni says he put out his hand, and whatever animal came near him and was willing to do the will of the tzaddik, the ratzon of the tzaddik, to be sent over to Esav, those are the ones he sent over. He didn't want to force any animals to go over to a goy. He didn't want to force any animals to have to do that. You're going to have to work on Shabbos. You're going to have to do other things. The guy's not going to treat you as good as I used to treat you. So he said, anybody that comes to me and is willing to come to me, those are the ones that I'm going to send over to Esav.
Esav's a goy. Isn't his parents the same as Yaakov?
Oh, very good. Yaakov Inu definitely kept the mitzvos, while Esav might not have had a bris milah. That's a very, very big difference between the two. Although you are asking a good question, what was the status of the Avos beforehand? Parshas Drachim, there's a whole sefer on it. It's about 250 pages on what the Avos were, B'nai Noach or B'nai Yisrael. You can go through it. Tell me what you come out with at the very end. Okay? That, we'll just go through it a little bit later. But there are big machlokes.
Esav held that he was B'nai, that they were just B'nai Noach, that they weren't Jewish.
Right. Esav Mamish held L'shitaso that he was a Ben Noach, that he wasn't Jewish whatsoever. Tesvav, if you look in Tesvav at all the things he sent, this is one of the weirdest psukim. This is going to be another answer that you got me in a bubby other. Ezim Mosayim Utyashim Esrim Rechelim Mosayim Ve'elim Esrim. The only pasuk in the Torah, I looked it up, that has 8 mem sophises at the end of the pasuk. 8 mem sophises at the end of the pasuk. Each one is a yud mem even. It's a yud mem, yud mem, yud mem, yud mem, yud mem. All together, all is one. If you count up 8 times 50, because it's yud mem, 8 times 50, you come out with 400. He was trying to battle the Kochos Atumah of Esav. The 400 of the Kochos Atumah of Esav, that's what he was going up against, and that's the reason why he sent over those things. You know what he did, though? The Baal HaTorim says, you know why there's a mem at the end of every word in the every letter in the pasuk? The reason why every word in the pasuk, because he sent him Bale Mum, as in a Bale Mem. He sent him only the animals that had mumen inside them, that had blemishes inside their skin. Now, he didn't send over 3-legged animals. That would look disgusting, and Asa's not going to be happy with that. He sent over 4-legged animals, but he saw the ones that were treif inside, and he sent those over, and that's why it says the mem at the end of the pasuk. How would he know what had a mumen inside it? How are you able to tell that? The Apter Rav quotes down, it's from a Darche Moshe in the middle of Yoredeya. You know what you're supposed to tell? Put your hand on the back of the animal and go like that. If the animal keeps its back straight, when you press your arm down the back of its animal, it's a treifa. If it bends with your arm, that means it's kosher. It's a way of checking the animals to see if it's kosher or treifa. What you do is you put your arm in the back of the animal and put it down and see what happens to the animal's back. If it goes in, again, it's kosher. If it stays stiff, it's going to be treif. So he took minha ba biyado, those that went with his hands, the ones that stayed up and they were stiff. I mean, above the other that went straight with his hands, those that were like that, those are the ones he sent over to Esav. That's what it means, mean above the other. That's a famous one. The final one is a Ben Ish Chai. You ever been in a cab in Israel? You ever see those little hands? Those little guys, like the little hands that are like that? And you ever notice there's no thumb? And I know people say, no, there's a thumb on this side and a thumb on that. It's not a real thumb. Because there wouldn't be thumbs on both sides. They're opposable digits. All 5 of them are supposed to be fingers. You know where that comes from? says the Ben Ish Chai, there is a skula from the number Chamisha. Says from the Chida, there's a skula from the number Chamisha, from the number 5. There's also a skula to have a red, silver, I mean the color red, the material silver, hand with 5 fingers to be able to take away all Ayin Haras. Ayin Ra is the gematria of 400. So in order to get rid of the Kochos HaTumah of Esav, which was Ayin Hara, the Ayin Hara that Esav wanted to put on top of Yaakov, what he did was, he gave him the hand. He put out his hand just like that. He put out his hand. And even though normally the hand cannot have, I can't have a thumb, you got to have 5 fingers, the only reason why I can't have a thumb is because a thumb is the, we don't want to say this, it's the sign of the Sultan. The sign of the Sultan. Yaakov didn't have any Sultan with him whatsoever. He beat the Sultan. So he didn't have to worry about that. So Vayikach min Abba Biyado means he used his hand, put out his hand to Esav to stop the Kochos HaTumah, and he was the first person to use that Chamtzin. The first person to use that red hand to go up to be able to stop any Ayin Hara from coming upon him, and by doing that, he's able to make sure that there was no Ayin Hara whatsoever. That's why Yikamina Babiyado, according to the Ben Ish Chai. You're not going to find that anywhere else. We all know the story of Abaye and the Beis Medrash with demons, right? I spoke about it this morning, about the Beis Medrash with demons. I'm going to add on a little bit to it. Abaye was in his Beis Medrash. I know we mentioned the whole thing about Pilegesh Begiva this morning. That's a little bit different. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, very good. So Abaye had a Beis Medrash full of demons. He didn't know what to do about it because this seven-headed demon was destroying all the Bachurim. He was killing all the Bachurim or hurting all the Bachurim, being mazik all the Bachurim. So Rav Acha Bar Yaakov was coming to town, sort of like Santa, just not the same. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov was coming to town. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov was coming to town. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov.
He had a son named Rav Yaakov.
Yes, Rav Yaakov Bar Acha. So I don't think so. I think it was, I don't remember. I don't think it was, no. But
yeah,
either way,
Yaakov and Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. His son was also named Rav Yaakov.
I don't remember. Okay, fine. That could be. But it's Rav Acha Bar Yaakov that came to town. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, Abaye said, Rav Acha Bar Yaakov is coming to town. Let's go ahead. We'll leave it up to him. He said to everybody, don't let him sleep by you tonight. Let him sleep in the Beis Medrash. He slept in the Beis Medrash that night, fell asleep. When he woke up, it doesn't say he fell asleep. He was learning all night. While he was learning, all of a sudden the seven-headed demon came up to him and roared. I don't know what seven-headed demons do. I'm assuming they roar. And came and scared him. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov bowed down 7 times. And after he had bowed down 7 times, each one of the heads of the demons popped, exploded, or whatever it was. And after the 7th time that he bowed, it was all over. The Marsha says he davened Shmon Esrei. Davening Shmon Esrei is the first 2 brachas you bow. The first bracha you bow. And then afterward, by modem, you bow twice again. So that's 4. And then 3 at the very end, at the end of your Shmon Esrei. Davened Shmon Esrei was able to destroy the power of that demon. Where did he get that from? What did Yaakov do when he first saw Esau? What did he do? He bowed down 7 times. What was he doing bowing down to Esau? So they all say, and Rabbi Shachter was saying it before, that he bowed down to the Shekhinah. He's bowing down to the Shekhinah in front of him. He wasn't bowing down to Esau, Chas V'Shalom. He was bowing down to the Shekhinah. He was doing something like that. He wasn't bowing down to somebody who was an Ovid Avodah Zarah. Chas V'Shalom. He was bowing down to something, to that Kodesh Baruch Hu, and it was just, Esau was in the way. The Pshat is he was davening Shmon Esrei. He was davening Shmon Esrei. He was finishing up his Shmon Esrei, and he bowed down 7 times. Bowed down 7 times in that Shmon Esrei. It looked to Esav as if he was bowing to him. And it took a while for Esav to come up to him. He stood all the way back here. Yaakov stood over here. As Esav was coming, he started his Shmon Esrei. And finally, he finished his Shmon Esrei, took his 3 steps back, took his all the seven bowings and everything, and took care of everything. Why did he bow down the 7 times? To destroy the Koach HaTumah of Esav. That was the reason why. The same way Rav Acha Bar Yaakov did it. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov learned it from good old Yaakov Avinu. He got it from Yaakov Avinu. So that's why he's called Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. It might have been his father was Yaakov. I have no idea. But he was called Rav Acha Bar Yaakov because he learned what he was supposed to do from Yaakov Avinu, to bow down 7 times, to get rid of Tumah by bowing down those 7 times. That's the reason why Rav Acha...
How were there 7 times?
The first 2 for the first bracha, then modim, there's 2, the beginning of modem and then the end, and then Shmona Esrei is 3. 1, 2, 3. To the left, to the right, to the front. Wait, Kiva, what do you do in your Shmona Esrei? No, 100%. That's how it ends up going. So we do have 7 altogether. That's why Yaakov Avinu said at the very end when he's talking with Esav, and Esav said, I want you to come with me, etc. He said, Yeshli Rav Achi. The Pshat is, Yeshli Rav Acha. I have Rav Acha with me. That the Pshat is, Yaakov Avinu says, he's saying, Yeshli Rav Acha. I have Rav Acha with me. And the gematria of Yeshli. No, Yeshli Ravachi. Oh, and Yeshli Ravachi is Esav saying it 100%. Yeshli Ravachi is the tuma. The way of beating the tuma is by saying Yeshli Ravachi, because I have Ravacha. Ravacha is going to be able to do it. That's 571. 571 is the same gematria as Ketev Mariri. Ketev Mariri is apparently either the father of the demon that was in that base medrash or the actual demon that was in that base medrash. A very scary looking demon that comes during the 9 days that you have to be afraid of in the middle of the day. When you go outside in the middle of the day during the 9 days, you might see this demon. If you do, you'll die. Either way, that's the Ketev Mariri, and that's the Klipos of Yishmael. That's what ended up happening over here. Okay, let's get off all that right now. Let's get off all that. Yaakov came to Shechem. What, anybody know what the first thing he did was? First thing he did. Anybody know? Bought the land. They did what? Nobody knows? Come on. But he kind of chokas asada. But right before he bought the field, what did he do?
Where are we?
It says in Pasuk Yurchas, Paraklam again with Pasuk Yurchas. It says Vayichan es Pnei Ha'ir. Vayichan es Pnei Ha'ir. Rashi says, Erev Shabbos Hay. It was Erev Shabbos, and he set up a Ruve Techumen. A Ruve Techumen. So that they knew where 2,000 Amos was, and they wouldn't be able to walk outside of the area of 2,000 Amos. Because they want to make sure they wouldn't be carrying themselves on Shabbos. You know, you can't walk 2,000 Amos outside of a city on Shabbos. So he made sure where the Techumen were. That's an interesting thing. We say about Avraham Avinu that he kept what? Even Eruv. Not Techumen. He kept Eruv. Tavshilin. Wait, you only had three choices. So it was going to hit one of those, you know? Eruv Techumen, that was Yaakov Avinu. Eruv Tavshilin was Avram Avinu. What's the difference between the two? That Avram had Eruv Tavshilin and Yaakov had Eruv Techumen. Unbelievable Meshachachma. You notice that Yaakov doesn't seem to have made one ger his entire life? He didn't make one ger. There's not one ger that he ended up getting out.
That's Yitzchak.
Wells, somebody has not read his Parsha this week. Somebody must read his Parsha or talk to his Mora, or he is not going to be admitted into class anymore. 100% Yitzchak and Avram, they made Wells. They're the ones who had the yeshivas. They're the ones who had the students. They're the ones who had everything. But Yaakov, you know? Nothing.
What about
Rachel and Leah? Was that Kiruv or was that getting a wife? That's a big difference. If you're doing Kiruv to get a wife,
I thought they were
not the best. That's a way of getting it. You're right. There definitely is Gerim, but that wasn't him making Gerim. He didn't go around asking for people to become Gerim. Leah chose to want to marry him. He wasn't like that. He wasn't like, all right, Leah, why don't you come join us? He was like, Leah, stay away from me. I just want to marry Rachel. He said to Lavan. He sits in his house for 20 years. He's not able to get him to bench. He's not able to get him to make a bracha. Sits in his house for 20 years. Esav, his own brother. He couldn't learn with him b'chavrusa. He couldn't do anything with him. He stole his b'chor from him. He couldn't deal with Esav whatsoever. Yaakov was not a gear maker. Why? Why wasn't Yaakov the gear maker? What about Avraham Avinu? I mean, Avraham Avinu definitely made Gerim. Yitzchak Avinu, Bandai made Gerim. What's up with Yaakov Avinu? And then all of a sudden he gets away from all that. Meshach Chachma says the most unbelievable words. Oh, beautiful. That's why. That's beautiful. You know, I had a friend once that did that. I don't want to say what his name is, but my Rosh Yeshiva once sang a whole shir. And the guy got up and he was like, why? And the Rosh Yeshiva was like, that was the best question I've ever heard. And he like goes on, he mentioned the shir quality. He said, and this guy asked the question, why? And he wrote it in his sefer, and the guy is mentioned in his sefer as asking why. And like the guy was like, I just didn't have a clue what was going on. So yes. Somehow you were mechavin to the right answer. So Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted you to have the Ruach HaKodesh of getting the right answer. The question is why. So now let's try to explain that why. What happened over here? Why would Yaakov, you know? Because Yaakov, you know, knew he had to have 12 kids. What he knew is that it's not the time to get Gary anymore. Avraham Avinu knew he had a kid named Yishmael. He saw that his kid was not going to be a Jew. And yet, he was still able to have other children. He saw that there were other children that were going to be born. His job in life, you're right, his job in life was to take the people who weren't going to be the Iker people, to take them and bring them as close to God as they could get. But not necessarily to keep them there. The Gerim that Avraham made are lost. They never went anywhere. They became Og, Melech HaBashan, and all the people in Bashan. They went with Eliezer, Avraham. It could be synonymous all in the same. Hanukkah, Alexander says they all went off the derech. Something happened to them, but those gerim did not remain. Yitzchak's gerim, they're gone. They don't exist. All they were told to do is bring as many people close to God as you possibly can. Invite them over for Shabbos meals. Make a ruvei tavshilin to make sure that you have enough food, you'll be able to cook enough stuff to be able to do as much things as you can to bring about all these people so that you can make more gerim. But Yaakovinu wasn't about that. You're going to have 12 kids and all 12 of them is going to be the people of Bnei Yisrael. Do not let them mingle and mix in with any other nation. Don't let them mix in with anybody else. You don't want to bring anybody else in. We are closed. We're closed. You want to join us? You better beg. You better beg. He wouldn't take any gerim. If people beg to be gerim, he said, okay, fine. We'll accept you. But that became Bnei Yisrael. Bnei Yisrael is we are today, as in, you want to join us? Okay, let's see your credentials. Let's see your credentials. You want to join our program? Fine, so let's see what you have. Let's see, can we gain from you? Or are you just going to be somebody who's going to bring us down? That's what Yaakov Avinu knew. So no, he wouldn't make gerim on purpose. He didn't want to make gerim. He didn't make gerim when he was in Eretz Canaan. He didn't make gerim when he was by Haran. He didn't make gerim when he was in Mitzrayim. He didn't do anything. He did not bring anybody else in. He kept them totally separate in their own little ghetto to make sure nobody else would come around. That was a ruvei tchumen. He made a tchum. He made a certain area, and he said to Bnei Yisrael, don't go out of this area. Don't let anybody out. Don't let anybody in. That was their ruvei tchumen.
What about Shechem? Isn't that the most plain shot example of making gerim of any of the avot?
Meaning going ahead and making them do bris milah?
Yeah.
That wasn't Yaakov's suggestion at all, and it was done as a trick. Completely a trick to kill them. So I don't see the riot at all.
He didn't protest.
He didn't protest. That's what you're trying to say?
Well, first off, he didn't protest, and second off, he complained when they did kill him later as a trick.
But not that he wanted them to keep them. Yeah, how do you know that was the, okay, let them be Jewish? And maybe it was, now that they already married into the family, we don't have much of a choice, so B'dievid will have to accept it. Maybe that was the choice, but it's not the exact same type of a thing. It's definitely not going out and proactively making gerim. They want to be mutilated? They want to go out and make themselves bris milas at that age? They're willing to go out and do it? All right. Maybe we'll accept them. The mysterious nefesh might be enough. But we're definitely not going to go out and get them. We're not going to be proactive and going and getting these people to become ours. And definitely, if he kills them, he will curse them out, and we will talk about that. Well, I don't know if we're going to talk about that today. But there is something to that. You got to check the Ramban on that also. Yeah.
When Yaakov visited Padan Aram, when he was running away from his brother Esau,
yeah,
he removed the massive stone from the well. Does that have anything to do with being Mikarev anybody?
No.
So then what was the significance of moving this big massive stone? What does that mean?
The Rabbeinu Ephraim and the Panach Raza both have the same answer, but the Ramban and the Or HaChaim say it a little bit easier. The well is Torah, and he removed the stumbling blocks and the hindrances of Torah. That's what he did. The well stands for Torah. So in that case, the Edger, the Roe Tzon and everything, he wasn't Makar of them. It's like, what do you guys... In fact, the first thing he says to them is, you guys are a bunch of idiots. He goes up to them, he's like, what are you guys waiting for? Well, we wait until everybody gets together so we can all roll off the stone together. You're wasting your time, you stupid fool. What are you doing? Why don't you just pick a time that, do something else or get something else to be able on top of that, to put on top of this thing, so you guys can actually work all day and not sit around being lazy and waiting for everybody to come. He yelled at them. He gave them mussar. And they went ahead. And they were sitting there like, thank you, sir. May I have another? One of those situations where you're not so sure what exactly to say. We just met you. And aside from that, this Rabbi Akiva and Dina has another thing behind that altogether. So either way, we'll go to that a little bit later. Lamed Hey Dalid, one of the strangest things I've heard in a long time. After they left Shechem, they gave to Yaakov all the strange gods they had in their hands. That's in Ezum and Mishrabel's name, and the rings in their ears. And Yaakov hid them under the oak tree that was right near Shechem. They left Shechem, they had just destroyed the entire city of Shechem, and they had a Avodah Zarah with them? The Eloheya Nehor, strange gods that they had with them? And if it was a Avodah Zarah, you're not allowed to just bury it. That doesn't work. You've got to destroy it. You got to throw it in the Yam HaMelech. You got to burn it. You're not allowed to just throw it in the ground and cover it up with dirt. That's not mutter. That's still a Avodah Zarah. You didn't do anything to the Avodah Zarah. So why was that allowed? Why did Yaakov allow them to do that? And why did he allow them to have the Eloheya Nehor in the first place? The Ramban is the best answer. It was gods that were mevatel by the Avodah Zarah. The only way for gods to be mutter kosher for a Jew to use is by being mevatel them by a goy, by having a goy say about them they're nothing, or by cutting off a little ear, or cutting off a little bit of that idol. Once he cuts off a little bit of that idol, that already makes it mutter for them to have. That makes it mutter for them to do, and mutter for them to for everything to have. So what the Ramban says is that they went ahead and did that, and then there was no need to bury it whatsoever. But Yaakov said, now that I'm going to Eretz Yisrael, I want a little bit of Kedusha Yisera. That little bit of Kedusha Yisera is going to be, we're not going to have anything inside our midst. Even this Elohei Anechor, which isn't necessary, we're still going to get rid of it. And they went ahead and buried it, even though it wasn't necessary. The Kusim used that as their reason for keeping Avodah Zarah. We're going to have to stop with that. Oh my gosh, I messed up. I'm really bad. I was supposed to give you guys 8 answers as to what Yehuda was doing when he slept with Bilhah. We'll get to it next time.
Reuven.
We'll get to it next time.